Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from PI Financial Commodities Futures Advisor Adam Piccolo about the grain markets this week. They were really fluctuating. Earlier in the week, we saw some pretty big drops in canola, but Wednesday, Thursday, we saw it make some gains again. Also, like other businesses, technology has been a big time saver for both feedlots and ranchers. That was one of the topics discussed during a panel discussion yesterday at the Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference. We will hear about how technology is helping some ranchers these days. Delegates at last week's crop production show in Saskatoon heard from Marlena Borsch, a market analyst with Mercantile Consulting. She provided an outlook for coarse grains heading into 2022. And a Saskatchewan-based bioenergy company is holding important talks in Regina this week with a potential customer from Japan. And Prairie Clean Energy is building a $1 million plant to buy flax straw from farmers and pelletize the straw into renewable biomass fuel. We'll hear from their president, Mark Cooper. All that and much more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And it's brought to you by Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio is looking to buy your canola. Call them today at 306-272-6284. The weather is also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, we're getting some flurries and some strong winds here right now.
Yeah, the winds have really picked up. We were expecting an increase, and actually they outperformed what we expected. Would already be a pretty gusty wind. So for the next, really not much more than hour or two, we're going to be dealing with these gusts, which could exceed 65, even 70 kilometers per hour. But the length of those I mentioned is almost done. We'll see them gradually decrease. Now, it's not going to be suddenly poof, the winds are gone, but they will weaken. The gusts will drop back below 50, then back below 40, and the temperature will also be falling. So even though the wind is coming down, the wind chill is still going to be bitter cold. It'll be dropping through the minus 20s over these next few hours as the temperature itself falls to minus 15. Our high for the day, when you look at the calendar, is going to be minus 1.5, the actual temperature this morning at 5 a.m. It's just been a steady decline since then. Very slow decline at first, and now picking up a little bit more over these next few hours. The temperature finally will bottom out tonight around minus 24. The wind chill, minus 38. But again, the wind will be continuing to diminish. Once we get past 10, 11 o'clock, there just isn't much wind to speak of. It'll drop off to almost, if not entirely, calm, and that will wipe out most of the wind chill. Now, minus 24, even 3 to 5 kilometer per hour wind will still drop the wind chill a touch, but certainly not into dangerous territory. Through the day tomorrow, the cloudiness returns, and likely by midday, a little bit of light snow. This will be a quick shot of snow. Much colder air, much less moisture to work with. So I'm not expecting more than a centimeter or two. We'll be around minus 15 for the high tomorrow. Tomorrow night, we'll drop off quickly to minus 22, then rise overnight up to minus 13 by Sunday morning, and another round of light snow on Sunday will be up to minus 5. The cycle, it will be all distinct areas of snow. Today's end. Tomorrow, they restart. They end. Sunday, they restart. And then Sunday evening, they end. And that looks like that might be it for this pattern. We'll be into a cold pattern, but we'll be at least into a dry pattern. And the good news is not a whole lot of wind. Sunday night, the wind will increase, and that's just when that colder air is coming in. So watch for some biting wind chills Sunday night. It'll be deceiving because during the afternoon, Sunday, we're at minus 5. But by Sunday night, we're down to around minus 30, and the wind chill likely getting closer to minus 40. The wind overall, the first couple of days of the week, not overly strong. It's just that brief period during the transition back to the cold. Minus 22 is the high on Monday, minus 20 with a mixture of sun and cloud on Tuesday. Most of the week, other than maybe a flurry on Wednesday, is dry. The good news is on the cold front. This is not a cold front coming through, the front of news regarding the cold. It only is a couple of days of the cold. Will start to trend back up toward normal, if not well above normal, by the tail end of the week.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour. The Paw is at minus 17 degrees. Swan River minus 9. Dauphin and Brandon minus 3. Shoal Lake Russell minus 8, Roblin minus 10. Regina is at minus 5, Saskatoon minus 10, Hudson Bay minus 14, Broadview Mooseman, Indian Head minus 8, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington minus 12. The Yorkton Melville region has some light snow, a northwest wind at 50, gusting to 59 kilometers an hour. 83% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 10 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 22 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of minus 5 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 33 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is minus 12. The normal low is minus 23. The sun rose in Yorkton at 8:42 this morning, and it will set at 5:21 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Swan River at minus 9 degrees. The cold spot was Clear Lake at minus 39 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Maple Creek, which got up to plus 7 degrees. The cold spot was Prince Albert, which dropped down to minus 41 degrees. And that's your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return right after this. Welcome back to GX and Agriculture. Grain markets were rebounding this week. PI Financial Commodity Futures Advisor Adam Piccolo says wheat futures were up 59 cents a bushel this week, while canola gained $30 per metric ton.
Starting off on the canola front here, March canola increased approximately $30 a ton, with actually the rally coming this week on Wednesday and Thursday, an increase of over $50 a ton there in those 2 days alone. So a fairly large increase and potentially a return back to the highs that we made on the contract back on January 7th. On the Minneapolis wheat front, the March contract increased approximately 59 cents a bushel here mid-morning. So again, similar to the canola front, a lot of the gains came on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of this week. It's been a fairly strong week across the board for all of the grain markets. When it comes to the canola front here, March beans have reached actually the highest level since June 11th yesterday. Today we're off a little bit. Traders may be taking some profit going into the weekend. When we look at the canola front here, it really seems like we could be, again, going back to some of those highs.
What's pushing up canola prices?
Well, a few things. Again, the first thing on the canola, like I mentioned, how the soy markets have been increasing. Soybean oil in particular has been moving quite a bit higher, pushed to the highest level since October 21st. There is news of another record high for palm oil futures. Plus, actually, really strength in the energy markets have been helping to support. Crude oil now going almost above $85 a barrel here on WTI. So that's definitely supportive for kind of some of those oil seed markets. Traders also see good crush margins in China, tighter meal supply, and really just strong expansion in their livestock as reasons for potential better demand from China for soybeans over the near term. And that's, again, maybe drawing that bit of a rally for beans and supportive for canola as well, too.
So what's the outlook for next week and beyond?
Well, next week, I think that traders are going to be, again, still watching, especially for beans and corn, the weather news out of South America. That's still kind of a main driver here right now. Funds are pushing those markets higher, and that's when things can get quite volatile because as things change. So canola, I believe, again, I've said to clients before that I still see prices remaining strong throughout the winter months here, but that doesn't mean there isn't volatility like we've seen in the last couple weeks. And then on the Minneapolis wheat front, we're seeing, again, a recovery since the lows that were made on the March contract. We did see a low of about 872 a bushel. So we've seen now kind of a rally, a bit of a recovery. I'm not sure if we're returning back to that $10 on the futures, but we are at least trending in the right direction.
Adam Piccolo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Winnipeg. It's time now for the Beef and Forage Report, and that's a presentation of Lane Realty. When it's time to sell the farm, call Lane Realty, your trusted and experienced farmland real estate company. To include your property for showings, call 620-7260 or visit lanerealty.com.
Beef and Forage Report.
A cattle producer from Alberta has been named to the executive of the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. Bob Lowe, a Nanton area rancher and feedlot operator, will serve as vice president. Lowe has served as president of the Canadian Cattlemen's Association since March of 2020. He says it's important to have Canada and producers represented at the table. Lowe says the overall goal of the roundtable is to promote the sustainability of the beef industry globally. The Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef represents 12 regional roundtables and over 500 members in 24 different countries. The roundtable reports its member organizations are responsible for more than two-thirds of cross-border beef trade. And that's today's Beef and Forage Report. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, Ag Review.
Canadian consumers should soon see higher prices and some empty shelves in supermarkets and other retail outlets because of disruption stemming from a COVID-19 vaccine mandate for cross-border truckers. That's according to top trucking executives. The mandate imposed by Ottawa to help curb the spread of the virus has cost six Canadian trucking companies about 10% of their international drivers, and many are hiking wages to lure new operators during what they say is the worst labor shortage they've experienced. Canada's inflation rate hit a 30-year high of 4.8% in December, and economists said the vaccine mandate may contribute to keeping prices higher for longer. In the United States, inflation surged 7% on a year-on-year basis in December, the largest rise in nearly four decades. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who has championed vaccine requirements for federal employees, has resisted pressure from industry to delay or drop the mandate that was announced in November. The vaccine requirement to enter Canada started last Saturday, and the one to enter the United States begins tomorrow. Corn imports into Western Canada from the U.S. have risen dramatically following the 2021 drought, but cattle feeders in Alberta say unpredictable shipments are not keeping up with demand. In some cases, feedlots say they are scraping together the last of their feed supplies and are banking on delayed trains still arriving in time to maintain rations. According to the latest numbers from the USDA, Canadian corn imports in October and November were more than four times higher than the previous year, while there were more than 2.2 million tons in U.S. sales into Canada on the books that were yet to be shipped as of the end of December 2021. The primary railway involved in supplying southern Alberta corn, CP Rail, says it moved 8,100 carloads of corn from the U.S. into Alberta in 2021, compared with 600 in 2020. Despite the massive increase in imports, multiple feedlot owners say they're in a desperate feed situation due to the delays in rail shipments, with no buffer for supply chain interruptions caused by winter weather or COVID-19. Canadian farmers are being asked for their input on a federally backed project to assess and improve cybersecurity in Canada's ag sector. The Community Safety Knowledge Alliance, the lead organization on the Cybersecurity Capacity in Canadian Agriculture Project, has put up a voluntary online survey for farm operators running until February 18th to look at how farmers understand and experience cybersecurity in their day-to-day work. Data from the survey, which is believed to be the first comprehensive survey of cybersecurity focusing on the Canadian farm sector, will be used to develop information and recommendations to help farmers safeguard their operations. The Alliance says its survey draws from work carried out in Canada and elsewhere to help us better understand how farmer experiences in this country compared to other areas and sectors. The survey is confidential, and no personally identifying information will be attached to any reports resulting from it. A new undergraduate degree program at the University of Saskatchewan is expected to fill a growing need for interdisciplinary training in both food science and nutrition. USASC says that the new Bachelor of Science in Food and Nutrition degree meets the needs of a distinct group of students who are keen to build knowledge in food industry, food chemistry, food processing, and other related areas, along with foundational knowledge of food nutrition and the role that nutrients play in human health. Housed in the College of Agriculture and Bioresources, students in the program will take both agriculture classes and classes offered by the College of Pharmacy and Nutrition. Prospective students can enter the BSc in Food and Nutrition program directly from high school or transfer in from another post-secondary program. Once in the program, students will learn how to address emergent needs in the food, health, and wellness sectors with the strong academic background of both sciences, nutrition, and food science. Students will also receive hands-on lab experience along with the opportunity for a summer work term that earns university credit. The new program is accepting applications for admission, with the first cohort to begin classes in September of this year. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will be back right after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. It looks like the light snow has let up. I see some sun shining out there now. However, it's minus 10 degrees, feels more like minus 22 degrees. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. Like other businesses, technology has been a big-time saver for both feedlots and ranchers. It was one of the topics discussed during a panel discussion yesterday afternoon during the online Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference. Chad Ross owns L7 Land and Cattle in the Estevan area. Part of his operation is a feedlot, and he's very pleased with his cloud-based feeding program, saying it's a huge time saver.
You know, I used to come in at night after a long day's work and then work on feed sheets for 2 hours, getting ready for the next day. And then we went to Excel and used that, and that was a big changer because I could just kind of plunk in the numbers. But now we got a cloud-based program. It records the amounts as they go into the feed wagon. It takes off the inventory. It bills the cattle for that inventory. The billing's done. You know, as soon as the bumps are red in the morning, I can literally do my feed sheets in a minute.
Whitewood area rancher Ryan Beierback spoke about changes he has seen in the cattle business over the past couple of two or three decades. The first one is land ownership.
When I grew up, a lot of ranchers would own their ranch, the whole ranch. And now it's where, you know, I own probably about two-thirds of what I run cattle on and rent the rest. And I know there's a wide range, like there's some producers that own quite a bit, but there's some more and more producers that own a quarter or don't own any land and rent the whole thing. And that's something that I've seen. So to me, that increases your risk, because if you're renting something, you have a short-term contract, you never really know for sure how long you're going to have that land for. You know, it might turn into a longer term, but it's tough to count on that. So that's, to me, made the business more risky.
Another risk is the growing cost of doing business. Buyerback says the beef prices and expenses are rising, but margins remain the same.
But then our margins are similar. So we've got, higher income, higher expenses, and, you know, margins that are similar. So to me, that adds risk into it too, because you got a lot more money out there that you're risking every year. Where, you know, 20 years ago, you had less dollars in inputs. So I guess to me, that seemed like it should be less risky. We've had some things that have helped us manage risk, like price insurance. And I think with higher input prices, we've needed some stuff like that so that we can offset some of that risk. We've improved the forage rainfall insurance.
Ryan Buyerback is a rancher from the Whitewood area. He was one of the participants in an online panel discussion yesterday afternoon at the Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for February are trading at 138.10, down 22. April live cattle trading at 142.50, down 67. March feeder cattle trading at 163.42, down 152. April feeder cattle trading at 168.20, down 132. February lean hogs trading at 86.45, up 152. April lean hogs trading at 95.62, up 162. And that's the livestock market conditions. Delegates at last week's crop production show in Saskatoon heard from Marlena Borsch, a market analyst with Mercantile Consulting. She provided an outlook for coarse grains.
Again, you know, the biggest coarse grain obviously is corn. And in terms of corn, the global production was up 8% this year, consumption up 5%, and the carryout was up somewhat. Like on the oilseed side, we are currently reviewing what will come from the southern hemisphere, from Brazil and Argentina, for example, in terms of the weather impact they're having right now. But that's the picture we have seen until today. So as you can see here, in terms of carryout for corn, the expectation was that it was uptrending a little bit. Major producers are China, to the tune of 272 million tons, the United States, Brazil, the EU, and India. So we are a much more marginal player, and we are just looking at this with respect to barley. In terms of major exporters, you have again the US, Argentina, and Brazil, and also important for the European demand side, certainly the Ukraine, and they had an excellent crop this year. Recent news have been supportive, and we have seen that in the futures markets. Several Brazilian states declared a state of emergency, and the private estimates of the crop have been downgraded by about 13 million tons. And Paraguay is offering emergency aid to farmers because of the drought there. In Argentina, some expect yields could fall significantly as well. And again, you know, we will see the Corn Up and USDA reports this week and see if they will already incorporate some of those numbers, or if it's a bit early for them to do so. But the recent news, again, have been supportive as well. Global barley production obviously is much, much smaller. It amounts to about 146 million tons in 21-22. And I listed on the left-hand side the major producers sort of by size. So that's the EU with 54 million tons, Russia, Australia, Ukraine, UK, Canada around 7 million tons. So this year, 146 million tons compared to 160 last year. So we are down 9% rather in 21 over 22. And again, you know, you see the relative size of the various players within the global market. On the demand side, we see about 150 million ton demand is the estimate for 21-22. And again, the major players are EU, Russia, Turkey, and certainly Saudi Arabia in terms of consumers. And they're also the biggest importer, ranging from 5.7 to 7.7 million tons. And here I remind you that there is still persona non grata as Canada in terms of exports of wheat and barley into Saudi Arabia. Global imports, so the traded portion of barley ranges from 25 to 35 million tons on any given year. And this year, that demand is estimated at 32.8 million tons. It's also reduced a little bit. And here, the biggest buyers, China and Saudi Arabia. Iran is also important, and I'm listing some of the smaller buyers, Japan, EU, Thailand, Turkey, Libya, and Jordan. Global ending stocks, 21.4 million tons, which would be an 11% stock use ratio, down from 13% the year before. So like a lot of commodities, this one also is tightening a little bit over the last couple of years. And you can see here North American barley production specifically, like a lot of commodities, we are down a third basically in 21-22 for anything that's produced really in the northern U.S. and in Canada. That has been roughly the percent reduction this year. So Canadian barley, this is the Canadian barley balance sheet. You can see the yield curve on the top here, steep downtrend this year, no surprise. Our supply is down 35%. And we would have thought that exports would be very, very small this year. But as we will see in a second, exports have been relatively strong, and domestic feed use is actually less than anticipated because of the exports. Ending stocks are estimated around 300,000 tons, which is a small 4% stock use ratio. And you can see that on the right-hand side here. So export shipments have been strong, specifically to China. These are this year's versus last year. The green number is this year versus last year. And China is really it in terms of the export picture. And as I said, I would have anticipated more domestic feeding. But what we have done is we have increased monthly imports of U.S. corn on the feed side and have been exporting our barley into China. So year-to-date exports are just under 1 million tons versus 746,000 last year to date. So that has been very impressive. And again, you know, our feeding sector has managed to handle this by increasing monthly corn imports from the United States very, very significantly. Corn has increased in price over the last little while, so we'll have to see if that scenario will continue for the rest of the crop year. I wanted to have a look at next year. We think around 8 million acres seeded versus 8.3 previous year, because there's also good competition from some of the major crops. Given close to normal yields, that would give us 9.8 million ton production and just over 10 million ton supply. For next year, I think we'll be looking around 3 million ton exports. Again, that will really depend on the mood China is in and the 6 million ton more traditional domestic usage for the coming year, which would give us 600,000 ton carryout, up from the 300,000 this year, still relatively tight, I should add. So in terms of recommendations, be sold all your current crop before we get anywhere close to new crop. Export volumes depending on China, and I put a note here that the barley shipped to China needs to have good germination because they use it for malt primarily. So that's something to keep in mind when you look at your own production. Domestic usage should be good at higher corn values for the coming year. New crop malt, their price is around $8 per bushel, which might be worth a look. But with corn pushing higher, we don't think there's a major rush on the new crop pricing, and we would like to see around 650 before we start doing that. So in terms of a very small summary, as I mentioned, on the various crops, be sure you to be sold old crop before the summer. New crop values are interesting depending on your confidence in next year's production. Just a little flag in terms of crop insurance. I realize it's quite expensive, but we are seeing a tightening of stocks. Prices have been very, very volatile, and weather seems to be more uncertain. So it's one of the risk mitigation strategies that we can employ. And again, you know, when you start planning your crops, look at the potential returns on investment, rather than trying to hit the market tops for the various commodities.
That's Marlena Borsch. She is a market analyst with Mercantile Consulting in Winnipeg. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update is coming up next.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are trading down in the nearby months this hour. March canola trading at $10.19.60. That's down $2.40. May canola trading at $10.05.30, down 10 cents. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $9.41.50, down 3.25 cents. March Kansas City wheat trading at $7.98.75, up 2.25 cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $7.86.25, down 4 cents. March corn trading at $6.17.25, up 6.25 cents. March soybeans trading at $14.16.75, down 9 cents. March oats trading at $6.19.50, down 21.5 cents. And that's the commodities update. A Saskatchewan-based bioenergy company is holding important talks in Regina this week with a potential customer from Japan. Prairie Clean Energy is building a million-dollar plant to buy flax straw from farmers and pelletize the straw into renewable biomass fuel. Prairie Clean Energy President Mark Cooper says the meeting with Renova of Japan highlights the global interest in flax pellets.
Yeah, it's very exciting times for Prairie Clean Energy. So the interest in the agricultural residue renewable energy capacity is significant from companies like Renova, who have a history of being focused on that renewable energy space. And so we were privileged to host a couple of guests from Renova's operations here in the middle of winter to meet with us and our team to talk about the opportunities to work together both with Renova as a customer of Prairie Clean Energy, but also perhaps as a partner in some joint ventures. And so early days in those conversations, but they were extremely positive. The Renova delegates enjoyed their meetings here and their time here despite the cold weather, and have promised that we'll be speaking again with them here in the coming days.
So no official agreement yet, but you're hopeful?
Extremely hopeful. I think that the vision that they came here with was about where this industry here with agricultural residue can go. Of course, immediately today with the impending purchase of flax pellets, but also in the 5-year and 10-year and beyond horizon, they have a clear vision of where they want to go and how they want to leverage the agricultural residue across the prairies, both in Canada and the U.S., to really seize the marketplace and take advantage of those opportunities. So we're excited to be talking to companies like them and to really be at the cutting edge of an emerging industry here in Saskatchewan.
What stage is your flax pelletization at?
Yeah, so we were funded this year through Innovation Saskatchewan to complete the last stage of our commercialization process, and so a combination of private capital that we've raised and money from Innovation Saskatchewan is contributing to the building of our first pellet mill, which will be operational in April here in Regina. And that pellet mill will be relatively low volume, so it will allow us to work through the kinks of managing flax straw, which is a challenging straw, but we have been able to pelletize it. And so between now and the end of 2022, We'll be producing pellets, selling those pellets locally here to, again, because of the low volume, we'll be selling them to local buyers. And we'll be completing the patent process for our pellets. And so by the end of 2022, we'll be in a position to start to look at overseas sales. And so the conversations with Renova and other companies to date have just been focused on being ready for that point here at the end of the year.
How much flax straw do you plan on using? And how much will the pellets themselves sell for?
Sure. We're going to purchase 6,000 tons of straw this year from producers in and around the Regina area, likely between 100 and 150 a mile radius is kind of the draw that we'll be looking for. So we don't need a huge amount of it. 6,000 tons is our goal for the year. And the pellet price will be starting at $150 a ton. And will depend from there on transportation costs and things like that. So that's the price.
What will be your key markets?
Yeah, so when Prairie Clean Energy started, we were focused entirely on the global industrial power production industry, and that remains our primary clientele, examples like Renova. But we've also realized that there's lots of local demand at smaller scale, say for chicken farmers who are bringing in coal to heat their facilities and carbon taxes, pricing that coal out of competitiveness. And so they're beginning to look at alternatives. And so we have a good local demand, which is growing, and strong international interest as the supply that they're using today in wood pellets becomes increasingly challenging for them to source. And they're always looking for more sustainable fuels. So the industrial power and local markets will be our prime customers in the as we move forward.
It sounds like there's plenty of room for growth.
Yeah, I mean, our objective is that by the end of this decade, we will have 8 facilities operating across the prairies, producing more than 100,000 tons per facility of flax pellets and other ag residue pellets, each facility employing in the vicinity of 40 people. And so we believe that the growth opportunity is significant. The supply is there. The demand is there.
Cooper says the flax pellet plant will be built this year at a cost of $1 million. He says larger scale plants will be in the $10 million range. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return right after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. Farm Credit Canada is offering to support farmers through the fifth wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. FCC Vice President for the Prairies, Shannon Weatherall, says farmers have faced several challenges during the past year. She says the lending agency is willing to offer supports like payment deferrals to reduce pressure and stress.
FCC, one of our cornerstones is customer support. And at challenging times like these where we can help, those our customers and those involved in the agriculture and food industry are very resilient. And that's an ongoing piece. But over the last number of months, we've seen more challenges than usual, perhaps, with respect to weather and supply chain issues. And then, of course, various phases of the pandemic, including this recent fifth wave, creating some additional challenges.
What has the fifth wave done to farmers?
So I think it's in conjunction with some of the other challenges. So depending on the individual customer and their circumstance, there's challenges created from the pandemic with supply chain issues, delays and rising input prices and costs, delays in equipment, maybe changing customer demand. So a number of different challenges on top of what we know were some severe weather challenges this past summer.
So farmers have been very resilient?
Absolutely. We know agriculture is an industry with change, and those involved are very resilient generally, able to weather impacts, rising input prices, supply chain disruptions. It's many things all at once that they're facing right now, and they're working through it. And at times, they might need someone to speak with, someone to work with them on their individual situation. They might need support in terms of principal payment deferrals or loan schedule amendments. And that's what we want to do. We want to know that, want to let customers know that we're here to help. If they want to speak through their individual situation and talk to a partner, that's what we're here for.
What kind of help are you offering producers?
We work with customers to come up with a solution for their individual operation on a case-by-case basis. But what that might include are principal payment deferrals. We might do other types of loan payment schedule amendments or increasing credit lines to support our customers in short-term financing needs.
So your key message is that farmers should always keep their lines of communication open.
Absolutely. If you're uncertain, if you're facing a challenge, if you want a partner to talk to, we're encouraging our customers to contact our FCC relationship manager. They can call our customer service center. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-332-3301. They can look on our website, and there's an email option as well. But really encouraging customers to reach out. Let's have a conversation, and we'll see what we can do.
That's Shannon Weatherall. She's the FCC Vice President for the Prairies. And don't forget, GX on Agriculture is always available on podcast. Listen to past shows whenever you want. Find them easily by going to gx94radio.com. Also, you can hear the podcast on your Amazon Echo. Just enable the GX94 skill and choose GX on Agriculture. And yes, it's free. It's 1 o'clock. It means it's time for the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Flurries ending, winds west-northwest at 35 to 60 and gusting higher at times. The temperature falling to minus 15, a wind chill of minus 30. For tonight, partly cloudy, winds west-southwest at 25 to 45, then diminishing, a low of minus 24, a wind chill of minus 38. For tomorrow, increasing cloud with a 70% chance of late-day flurries with 2 centimeters possible, a light variable wind and a high of minus 15. For Sunday, a 60% chance of light snow with 2 to 4 centimeters possible, winds north at 10 to 20, a high of minus 5. For Monday, sunny skies, a high of minus 22. Tuesday, partly sunny, a high of minus 20. In the Paw, it's minus 17 degrees, Swan River minus 9, Dauphin and Brandon minus 3, Show Lake Russell minus 8, Roblin minus 10. Regina is at minus 5, Saskatoon minus 10, Hudson Bay minus 14, Broadview Mooseman Indian Head minus 8, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington minus 12. The Yorkton-Melville region now has a mainly sunny sky, a northwest wind at 50, gusting to 59 kilometers an hour. 83% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 10 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 22 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.